And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. I got a caller on line one, Boomer. All right, before I start the next dipper, I'll just go ahead and take that real quick. Is that Brian? Brian from Huntsville. How you doing today, man?
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, do we lose him?
Yep.
We just like, just bam. All right. Well, Brian, you want to call back in? You're welcome to it. He was calling about Section 230, I think, wasn't he? Yeah, he's
yes, sir.
Okay, so I guess the if I understood what his question was gonna be, he was asking, does Section 2 is the case on Section 230 before the Supreme Court right now? Is it gonna change the way the internet companies are allowed to use their algorithms? Well, here's the bottom line: the case is called Gonzalez v. Google, and Gonzalez v. Google. Basically, the question turns on whether or not Section 230 will shield the tech companies from using their algorithms to either promote content or prevent content. So the tech companies, I mean, they make a huge amount of money by literally guiding you to the things that are, you know, ad buyers and whatever else. So if this case goes the way some believe it might, we could very well see that the algorithms are not allowed to discriminate, nor are they allowed to promote in such a way that it favors one side or the other. I mean, I don't know how they're going to balance that with advertising content, but I don't know. Boomer, is he back on the line?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Lots more where that came from. You want to text in, call in, you're welcome to it. 833-68-RIGHT. That's 833-687-4448. So, going through my notes here for number two on the Triple Dipper, it's amazing what happens. I kind of have me a little diatribe, like a little off the cuff moment at the beginning of the show. It's amazing what happens when government not only sets policy, but then decides to try and get into the market and tell the market how to work. It's not a free market that way, all right? To be a free market, it has to be free. And I'm not talking about free from taxation or free from, you know, violations of the law. No, I'm talking about being free to actually build the better mousetrap and then market it and sell it and then, you know, drive people to your product because you're the best one at the best price. Well, end result is we have a situation. When government gets involved in not just helping set energy policy, but setting the market, then you got a problem. At that point, you are in a total different ball game. Because like I said earlier, the government should not be in the position of being allowed to pick the winners and the losers. Let me ask you this rhetorically. What happens, and I've used this before, but it's like the easiest way to kind of picture this. What happens if you move to a small town? You move to this beautiful small town, you got a house on some land, you're so glad to be there, your family's excited about being there, the weather seems like it's always beautiful, everything's fine, except there's only one grocery store, just one. But so you go there, but you notice that the shelves never seem to be fully stocked, the produce just doesn't seem to ever be fresh. You know, you question sometimes whether the prices are set the way they should be, but it's the only one in town. And so you're thinking, man, you know what? I could make a mint if I could open up another market. I could open up another supermarket here in town, and it'd be great. And so you go to the city council, and you apply for a business license to be able to open up a competitive market. And they tell you, no, you can't do that. Why? Because that's the one that's already there now. That's the one we want. We as a city council, we gave them the authority to set up, and we told them they wouldn't have any competition. Yeah, but their stock sucks and their prices suck and it's never as good. I can do better down the road. Everybody would flock to my door. We'd all be happier, fresh tomatoes and good prices. No, we're the government. We know better. We don't want that. See, that's what happens when government gets involved. It's one thing to say the government has a business license. It's one thing the government to say they have a sales tax. It's another thing for the government to say, and oh, by the way, we're going to pick the winners and the losers. Well, just last week, story here, I pulled this one off of MarketBusinessInsider.com. President Joe Biden has urged gas stations to cut their prices at the pump for American drivers as he takes a jab at them for delays in passing on a drop in oil prices. So he alleges, you guys are out there trying to make money off people. And I'm not kidding. It was one of those kind of like angry Joe Biden moments at the microphone. It says that a White House Competition Council meeting on Monday of last week, Biden highlighted the fall in crude oil prices worldwide in August, but proceeded to criticize companies for the long time, he says, it takes for those to show up at those lower prices to show up as lower costs for gas buyers. Okay. He says, this is the quote, "My message is simple. To the companies running gas stations and setting those prices at the pump, bring down the prices you're charging at the pump to reflect the cost you pay for the product. Do it now. Do it now. Not a month from now. Do it now. It's going to save people a lot of money." How about this? Maybe they already did, sir. But they've got to have the price get down to them. The guys that have the gas pumps, they're the low end of the totem pole when it comes to the oil and gas industry. When you gerrymandered the ability to produce oil and gas and to make us stay energy independent and then to screw up the supply chain, you're the one, Mr. President. Your policies. And for you to tell the private sector, I mean, when's the last time somebody told Apple to lower the price on your telephones? iPad shouldn't cost that much. How about this? Hey, supermarket, cereal should cost less. Make cereal cheaper. It doesn't work that way. Supply and demand. Free market. We're going to talk to Bart Fletcher, President of Petroleum and Convenience Marketers of Alabama. Get his thoughts on how these comments went over for his industry. Yeah. Coming up next, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And Boomer, did you play Blue Collar Man for our friend Jeff Brown, who's in studio? Is that what just happened?
Blue Collar Man.
Right. Little sticks, Blue Collar Man. Hey, by the way, text lines are open, 833-687-4448, if you want to text or call in for that matter. 833-68-RIGHT, that's the phone number. Daryl from Huntsville just texted in on that interview with Bart Fletcher. Says, great informative interview. Well, let me keep it going here for a couple more minutes. So Jeff Brown, my friend who connected me to Bart Fletcher, is here, the owner of Brown Oil Company. And, Jeff Rowe, you're a second generation. I mean, this is a family business. Y'all have been around for a bit. You have to come on close to that microphone right there. But, I mean, you heard Bart talking about it. I guess the reality is, knowing you, I would know that there are a lot of family-owned businesses like yours that are in this industry. It's not made up of all the huge conglomerates. But price at the pump, 29-cent change in 24 hours, you said?
That's correct. From my independent supplier, we had a change of a total of 19 cents yesterday. So far today, with the 10 a.m. change, another 10 cents today.
So how does that work? I mean, do they literally have to, the station owners, do they literally have to keep something going that tells them and they have to run out there and adjust the pumps and the price? What's happening there? How do they keep their margins by, like, every hour they change it?
Well, unfortunately, we're the one business that everybody else tells us what we sell our product for. People drive by our stations. There's a price sign on the corner. The customer drives up to the intersection, and they decide who they're going to buy from. Based on the information that is posted out on the street, what other industry does that way? So, you know, very competitive in terms of what we do. Sometimes we have to take what the market gives us, and that's what when the street price changes. But, you know, you can't just go up one day and expect, you know, everybody else to follow. very, very competitive market, and it puts you in the situation where, no, you don't get to adjust for all those price changes. You have to wait until the street adapts to give you the margin that you have.
All right, so let me ask you this question then. Based on what you just said with about a minute and a half left, are there days when you actually sell at a loss? I mean, is that what you're telling me?
Today is that day.
Today's that day.
Oh, I mean, you know, you can't adjust. You look at the street today. It hasn't reacted to those wholesale prices that have come, but it works its way down the chain.
Yeah.
And once it arrives, let's face it, you've seen grocery prices increase. You've seen clothing prices increase. You've seen a lot of things that affect the households. The only reason that those have increased is because the suppliers up the line have increased their price.
Yeah.
So therefore, the retailer, you know, they have to charge more than what we're doing. The unfortunate thing is ours is a very volatile market. It changes every day, sometimes twice a day.
Wow. That's amazing. So, I mean, I just looked at it and thought, who does this? I remember one time there was, Bill O'Reilly on Fox went through like a month of saying, who sets the price? And he was determined to find out. But the truth be told, the price is set on the high end of the market, and then like it matriculates its way down through the system. Is that right?
That is correct. And, you know, we're no different than an individual that goes to the station to fill up and they say, wow, my price costs me more. It's going to cost me more to fill up. Well, a normal car, you know, will hold somewhere, you know, 15 to 20 gallons. Our tankers hold 9,200. 9,200 gallons. Do the math. Just today, 9,200 gallons times 10 cents a gallon, that's easy. $920 that it cost more today than it did yesterday. And that's the way that our retailers buy their fuel is, you know, a truckload at a time. So those prices, whenever you look at it in a simple mathematical way,
yeah,
you know, we're filling up our tanks just like the consumer is filling up theirs, just at a higher cost.
All right, brother. Well, just like the pastor hears the music playing, has to stop his sermon. I'm there. I got a break coming up. But, God, it's been enlightening. I had no idea. This has been good. I got more, folks. I got more. Government-run energy. What happens when the government gets involved in trying to set the prices and gerrymander the market? We all lose. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming up on hour number 3. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, hour number 3. Phil Williams here live, still in the Right Side studios, the local, the state, the national. Man, we cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, my buddy Jeff Brown is still here because right as he's about to walk out the door, I said, hang on, let me ask you a question. And I said, okay, now guess what? You get to stay longer. So, hey, Jeff, thanks for still being here.
As soon as you'll take the handcuffs off, I'll leave.
So here's bottom line, man. Part of what I was going to cover today, I got a story here from this one just came off of WSFA.com down Montgomery way. Story came out September 27th, which would be last week. Electric car owners will soon have more charging options in Alabama. On Tuesday of last week, the Biden-Harris administration approved Alabama's plan to build out high-powered electric vehicle charging stations along the interstates. Jeff, you've probably heard the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill allows $5 billion to help install electric vehicle charging stations along the interstate corridors. All right, so I think you said the term for you is you're a jobber. You supply the oil and gas, but you also have some retail locations of your own too, right?
I do have some retail locations, but I don't run any of them myself.
Yeah.
I lease those out and am involved in the sale of gasoline from a consignment perspective. In other words, my part is the gasoline outside the individual that leases my store. His share of the market is on the inside.
Okay, so... But knowing that you've got sort of a insider's view of what it takes to run a retail place, what's going on right now with this? I mean, I'm hearing we're going to be charging stations being put out there. $5 billion in, you know, tax money is going to be used to put charging. Are they really going to, I mean, they're not putting them like on the side of the road on the interstate. They've got to be at a location, I assume, like at a refueling site, like a gas station. What is your industry seeing coming? What's happening?
Well, I mean, it makes sense for these charging stations to be at the same place where other people get their energy, where other people get what it takes to move their vehicle around. So, you know, because they have needs. And so, you know, whenever they go to a convenience store, the situation is how long that they're there, how long it takes to charge a vehicle. It's not like driving up and placing the nozzle into the car and then, you know, 3 minutes later you're on your way. It can take a significant amount of time.
The article here says at best you're looking at a 15 to 30 minute charge, assuming you're not waiting in line to get the charge. So,
well, that's an issue. That's a problem. People that have the newer electric cars that are all not gasoline powered engine
hybrids
type, you know, they're totally dependent on that charging station. And, you know, some people can't afford to put a heavy duty type charging station in their home. Yes, they can charge it, but it's not like the full level charge, like what is needed. Very expensive to put that. So sometimes they're dependent on going somewhere in town so that they can get a faster charge because they don't have what they need to accomplish what they need to do.
So here's my question for you. As your industry looks at the push by the U.S. government to go more towards electric vehicles, zero emission vehicles, California talking about going to all electric at some point in the next 10 years, which I don't think is going to happen. But if they're talking about spending $5 billion, and apparently we now have an Alabama plan to put EV stations, charging stations out there, What does that mean? Are y'all bidding for these, or are they going to be at your sites? Are you going to get grant money from the government to put them in? And then if you're not on the interstate corridor, then what do you do? Because the interstate corridor is the only place they're talking about right now, right?
Well, if you're not on the interstate corridor, you can't put in the type charges stations that are needed to fast charge a car and get somebody on their way when they're traveling. I mean, you know, when you're traveling up and down the road, how often do you have the time to sit and wait for your car to charge, you know, 45 minutes or even longer than that if you want, you know, a different type charge? You need the convenience of being able to move around and go. Yes, there is grant money that's available, so people assume, well, everybody that's in the convenience store business is going to be putting one around. You know, I've priced it. You know, we're talking a couple of $100,000.
Shut up!
In order to put in a charging station. You can't put them in any type of a rural type location because it requires a certain level of power from the grid, three-phase power, to be able to put one in. So, you know, just the idea and thinking of that there's going to be charging stations everywhere, the grid does not currently support that opportunity to be able to occur or to happen. So that's why they're targeting along the interstates at this time.
I mean, I guess their argument will be you got to start somewhere. But still, I look at it and say, okay, if you're inside the city, you're not on the interstate, then you got to run to the interstate to get a charge. And then at that point, what you've just done too is you sort of set up the folks who are able to get the grant money. Like, for instance, in our area right now, you can go out there to, say, a Love's truck stop on the interstate and rush out there to get a charge you need and then come back into town. But if you're one of the in-town retailers, you didn't get the grant money. You got to spend $250,000 to be able to put in a charging station to stay competitive.
Well, if you want to be able to satisfy the need, you know, in that market, and you know, I can kind of summarize it up this way. Years ago, I was at a convention with one of the big oil companies, which I represented their brand, and I never will forget they had the chairman of that particular company there. And, you know, they were asking about what the future is for cars and the industry and everything like that. And he said, guys, He said, let me make sure you understand something. We're in the energy business. In other words, whatever energy that moves this country, that's the business that we'll be in. Okay? You know, that provides a future possibly for, you know, a jobber like myself who sells product. You know, if the market determined that's what we needed to sell, there would be a definite roadmap for us to get there and to accomplish it, not through the government,
right,
but through the energy company that helps us supply the needs of the people that are there.
Which is the free market, then.
Which is the free, oh, man, don't get me started on the talk.
I just did. I just pushed the button. I just pushed the launch button.
Well.
No, but that's the thing, is what we're looking at right now. This whole segment I'm doing on the show, you walked in and caught me doing one called Government-Run Energy. What I'm talking about here is the government can set policy, but when the government actually intervenes in the market itself, then the government is not just setting policy, it is picking the winners and the losers.
Yeah.
And in this case, if you've got a site on the interstate, you might get, it sounds like, $250,000 grant to put in a charging station. But if you're a well-run, family-owned franchise that has several in town, not on the interstate, or in a rural area for that matter, you may not have any capacity, much less the finances, to be able to put this in.
Well, but don't look at it from the point of the jobber and I don't have what I need. I can't meet the needs of our customers. In other words, I can't place them all around and in the areas where they need to be. And also, this grant money that's available, it's a very controlled thing. In other words, they don't want to give grants to three stations on the same exit. They want to be sure that as they go up the interstate, this exit has a facility with a charging station. That exit has a facility with a charging station, because it's not an unlimited amount of money that's there, but you can imagine the ability of a much larger jobber, maybe even a national branded jobber, Circle K Loves, one of those. They can capture more of that grant money because they can offer a footprint of being able to place them where they are. An individual guy like me, I may or may not have the opportunity to be able to do that. We're looking at it, but it's hard to find the way. It's really hard to obtain that grant. It's not like you're just going out buying tickets to go see a movie. It's you got to be in the right position.
This is okay. You know what? I already had a beef with the way some of this was developing with government policy, and I think I got a whole side of beef now. Just to be honest with you, Listen, man, between you and Bart Fletcher, y'all have enlightened me today, and I appreciate you stopping by and just making it known. Just for y'all to know, I texted Jeff early this morning and said, hey, man, can I get your thoughts on this, and would you be able to talk on the show? And next thing I know, I've got him and the president of the petroleum and convenience marketers. But
One last thing, if
I
could.
Yeah, man, what you got?
The issue I think we have is we've got an individual in the White House that has never signed the front of a check.
Yeah,
he's only signed the back, and does not understand basic economics and how that they work. If you let the free market just survive, you know, I have a pickup truck now that, because of the free market and the development of the ability of engineers, you know, I get 30 miles to the gallon in that truck. It's a diesel powered truck, but I'm getting 30 miles to the gallon. Okay, let's let the free market work. And those answers will come rather than saying, okay, this is how it's going to be, and only in one perspective.
And we're going to subsidize it with tax dollars.
And we're going to set, well, when we subsidize it for tax dollars, who pays for that? Joe Biden certainly doesn't.
All right, so I'm going to step out and let you co-host my show now for the rest of the afternoon, because you got the stuff, man.
I don't know about that, but I have gained a lot of respect for you, and my hesitation to come is sometimes the discussion of gasoline and prices. You know, it's not a favorite subject in terms of ours, because nobody seems to understand our point of view and where we're coming from. I hope that Bart was able to explain it in a way.
Well, you and Bart both, man.
Well, you've treated us very fair, and your perspective is very, very good.
Well, I'll wait till you leave the room, then I'll turn on you. How about that?
That's what I fully expected today.
Boomer, take us to a break so I can take his handcuffs off. All right, folks, that's been good. I tell you what, I don't know, Boomer, if I'm going to be able to get to number three on the Triple Dipper now.
It's going to be hard.
Jeff came in and just totally sidelined me, and what do I do?
Hey, but incredible information.
And good stuff. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. We will be right back. And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I'm going to wrap up this section here on government-run energy. I got a caller on the line, Boomer. Yeah, line one, Thomas from Athens. Hey, Thomas, how you doing?
Hey, we appreciate you having on, Phil, the two gentlemen that you had showed a lot of light, but I wanted to add something to your side of beef.
All right.
When the government makes decisions on who gets the grants of the $5 billion on who's going to build what, where, and when, do you think there's any crony capitalism there? Or there might be some favoritism towards woke corporations or even minority-owned as opposed to majority-owned businesses.
Thomas, why would you ever say such a thing? I cannot imagine such.
As George Washington said that when he talked about the Hessians, let the lamp of experience guide my feet.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, though. I'm not going to be a bit surprised. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Thomas, great call, man. Thanks very much. Appreciate you being in the audience.
Hey.
I got a caller on line, too. Let me grab that. Kevin from Decatur. Hey, Kevin. Phil Williams, how you doing?
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
I just want to touch on what you were talking about, Joe Biden saying that gas stations to lower their prices. To me, he's projecting that it's their fault and not his fault.
Right.
When we know it's his fault. It's propaganda, pure and simple, in my opinion. It's Hitler and Goebbels propaganda projected on the other people when it actually is your fault.
Yep,
that's just my take on it.
That's a spot on take, though. I mean, Saul Alinsky wrote Rules for Radicals, and one of his rules was to find the target,
and
fix
Hillary
it.
Hillary was a fan.
That's exactly. Oh, she absolutely was, and so was Obama.
So was Obama.
And one of the rules of for radicals was find the target, fix it, and then ridicule it, and then and ostracize it, and that's how you gain the upper hand.
It's like they did the 45. Or 44.
Yep, absolutely. Did we lose him? We just lost Kevin. We just lost him. Okay. Hey, Kevin, thanks for the call, man. Apparently your call just dropped, but appreciate you being in the audience. I got some text lines going too. I mean, I tell you what, I'm Boomer, the stack of stuff that I've got that I'm not even going to get to.
You got a pretty big stack.
It's a stack, man. I'm just all the stuff. I'm showing the camera. All right, so I got some text lines. See what I got over here. You know what? Daryl from Huntsville asked a great question. I wish I had asked this. If somebody knows, otherwise I'll try and text my buddy Jeff, who was here a minute ago in the studio. What would be approximate cost to charge a vehicle? I don't know that. When you pull up at one of these charging stations, what do you have to pay out of pocket? I mean, like, normally we pay for gas by the gallon. What do you pay by the kilowatt? How's that even work? I don't know. JT from Lacey Springs texted in. He says, I'm sure EVs have extensive safety features, but emergency responders have a new risk. EV voltage can be up to several hundred volts. You can smell fuel, but you can't smell electricity. Oh, dang. That's a thought. What you got, Boomer?
All right. So I just looked it up for you. Charged by the kilowatt.
All right.
But a small car could range anywhere from $11 to $23 for a full charge, and a bigger vehicle with a longer distance charge could be anywhere from like 22 to 45,
okay,
somewhere in there.
All right. So comparable to buying a gallon, a tank of gas right now.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yep. Well, then you're not saving as much
not
money.
Saving as much, are you? You have to wait longer.
You know what? What's also amazing to me, they keep forgetting the fact that the energy you charge your vehicle with has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
And so one of the things that keeps, well, you're going to be saving the environment. Well, until TVA gets off of coal-fired plants, I don't know what you're talking about, because all the things you think are dirty and nasty and shouldn't happen, that's how we power these charging stations that charge cars.
Yeah, and it's going to – I mean, even like we've talked about before, is in the evenings when charging stations are supposed to be low, like the power grid is supposed to be on the down low and just kind of resting, it's going to be up high because everybody's going to be charging their vehicles.
Absolutely. And by the way, I just got a text from Paul from Athens, who's with regards to me only getting the two dippers today. He says, just start with the Camel and number three tomorrow. And Paul, you were spot on, man. We'll definitely have the Camel. That's going to have to happen. Well, I got another one here. Daryl from Huntsville again texted in and said, the government doesn't do anything without an end game. It's not the environment. They couldn't give a flip. It will drastically reduce the travel of American people. There are so many things to look at with this. You know, and what he's talking about, I've heard more than one person say this in these discussions. So, Daryl, spot on, is you are limited. Your range went from having a tank of gas with a gas station on every corner. No matter where you are, on or off the interstate, you can find a gallon of gas. And that if you run out of gas, it's your own fault, basically, because you could have stopped. Not with EV vehicles. They have an average range of 200 miles, I believe, is what I'm looking at the average right now. 200 miles. And if that's the case, then unless you can find a charging station, guess how far you're going? 200 miles. That's about it. That's like driving from, what, Huntsville to Birmingham? Huntsville to Montgomery? The idea that the mobility of the nation is going to be enhanced by this is a fallacy until we see charging stations that can zip you a charge like a gallon of gas can be put into a car now with a range and another recharging station in quick time. I'm just saying, folks, they're pushing it, but when the government gets involved in the energy sector, they just violate all the free market principles, all of them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We got more. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Okay, before I jump on the phones, I got to take a minute to talk about some of our sponsors. So listen, you guys have heard me talk about this, and I know y'all have seen the ads. Water contamination at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Apparently it's legit, man. It's real. Water contamination at Camp Lejeune Marine Base, North Carolina. I called some friends of mine that I heard were working on this. So the Riley and Jackson law firm out of Birmingham, we have collaborated on a number of issues. The folks that run it are friends of mine. And I called them and I said, what's the deal, guys? They have 5 lawyers working on this. It's that big for them. And they said, literally, he said, Phil, man, listen, it's like there's like 19 major illnesses that have been attributed to confirmed water contamination that the government knew about at Camp Lejeune and didn't do anything to stop it. And so if you were a dependent, if you were a service member there for permanent duty station, TDY, or training, doesn't matter. If you were there between 1953 and 1987, you may have been exposed to contaminants that could have caused some illnesses. Listen, here's the bottom line. Call them and find out. Riley and Jackson, no charge for the call. 205-879-5000. That's 205-879-5000. It's not going to cost you anything to talk to them. They only get paid if they find something for you in terms of a claim. They're making claims daily right now. 205-879-5000, Riley and Jackson Law Firm, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And tell them you heard about it on the Right Side. They'll be getting a bunch of calls. Speaking of calls, I got somebody on line one who held on during the break. Let me honor that real quick. Oh, Steve from Tennessee. How you doing today, man?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing good. I wanted to chip in on this EV thing. A couple of things. The EV is a throwaway car. And if you don't believe that, there are several instances that have been exposed on the internet lately where somebody bought one used and then found out they had to buy a battery, and the battery cost far more than what the car was worth or what they ever dreamed that they would. I mean, they pay $11,000 for the car and the battery's $14,000. And oh, by the way, they don't make that battery now. So you're literally stuck with a throwaway. And if you want to understand the impact of the cost of lithium, go to Home Depot and look what it costs you to buy a drill and a battery and a charger, and then walk around the other side of the aisle and look at what it costs you to buy the battery by itself.
Yes,
absolutely. That'll prove to you why you don't want to buy an EV, because unless you're wealthy enough that you can toy this thing and it's just kind of an amusement for you, If that's what you're buying, I've got a Ford pickup truck. I'm sitting in my garage right now, and I'm looking at it. I bought it new in 1995. It's worth almost as much now as it was when I bought it. Never been wrecked, never been hit. Got like 130,000 miles on it, and I have people hit me up to buy that truck all the time. It's my only truck. It's lasted me 27 years. I will guarantee you there's not an electric vehicle anywhere that can come anywhere close to the resale retention. You talk about a rapid depreciation thing. And another thing I heard from some folks, I got family down in Florida, they're saying that there are some electric cars that cooked off in the flood.
Ooh.
Because, you know, I saw a bunch of these fires going on, and I thought, that's
ooh,
weird. Why so? Electric cars, the lithium can't take water. And when you mix water with a lithium battery, that's why they've had several of them burn up in junkyards, where they've been in a wreck. They're sitting out there with all the other junk cars, and they cook off in the middle of nothing. And people are like, how? And it's a Class D metal fire that melts everything around it. The only thing you put it out with is like, get a fireman. The only thing you put it out with is dust. So unless you can cover it in sand, water's just going to make it worse. So I'm just saying, throw away car. That's what I think, and I wouldn't touch one. My 2 cents.
That's 5 cents, man. That's a whole 5 cents. That's a whole nickel, Steve. Appreciate you, man. Great.
All right, buddy. Later.
Bud. Wow.
I mean, that was wow.
I got the best audience in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Don't nobody have an audience like I got an audience.
Oh no.
People that listen to my show could actually host my show. I have the honor of sitting in front of the microphone, but then I get calls like that. And then I got a bunch of texts over here too. This one from our new guy on the text string, Boomer, Dave from Decatur. In fact, I meant to say, when I saw this text, it was exactly what was just said there by Steve from Tennessee. Dave from Decatur says, first of all, how long would it take a 15-minute charge to discharge when you're in city versus interstate traffic? I guarantee you there's a difference because you know our mileage changes city versus interstate. But then the next question he says is, what is the lifespan of the batteries and the cost to retrofit an electric vehicle at the end of the battery life? Well, that's exactly what Steve was talking about. I've seen the same reports. Stories where there was one story where I saw a mom and dad thought it would be really cool to buy their 16-year-old daughter her first car, and they went out and they bought a used electric vehicle. I've forgotten what brand. But within a few months of buying it, it began to peter out, and they realized the battery wasn't sustaining its charge like it was supposed to. So they thought, okay, this is like anything else in life. Your battery runs out in your flashlight, you put new batteries in. The cost of the batteries was more than they had paid for the vehicle. It was unbelievable. But I'd never thought about it as fully as what Steve just enlightened us on about the fact that they're basically a throwaway vehicle. It becomes a giant freaking paperweight. It's a doorstop. It's a space taker. And because do you want to put in the battery that costs more than the car? Not likely. I mean, most folks don't want to replace an engine in a gas-burning vehicle if they had to. But you can, because it'll burn gas, the same gas you were burning before. This one is going to be a different style battery, or a battery they don't make anymore. That's amazing. I got some other texts on here to see what I got. Let me see what I got.
Todd has something good.
Todd, where? Todd from Madison?
Yes.
Todd from Madison. Also, on the EV charging topic, he says, how does the government ever expect to get our truckers off of fossil fuels? The lifeblood of our economy. These big boys aren't going 50 miles without a charge. Preach!
Yep.
Preach. Jeff from Indiana, we'll talk about that one, I guarantee you. What else we got? We do have one who has not given us his name yet. Brand new texter on the string. We got a name and we got a number, but no name. He says, I'm a conservative Republican with a Tesla, also an electrical engineer. It works great for me because I drive 800 miles a week. I'd be happy to call in if you'd like me to attempt to answer a few questions. You are welcome to call in, unnamed texter. We'll be glad to hear it, because if you want to bring some rationale to what we're talking about, right now most of the world believes that if we all plug in, that the grid takes a drawdown that maybe we wouldn't expect. We got a caller, Boomer?
No. It was actually Brian. He was just saying, hey, what about those extended warranties you could get for your car? Will they honor those batteries?
I don't know. It's a great question, Brian.
You know, that's...
I mean... And does the warranty extend to when it catches fire and burns up?
Man.
Or, wow, okay. What else we got there? There's one just recommending a book for me. I appreciate that. That's Darryl from Huntsville. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much. Paul from Athens says, I sat in traffic in Decatur yesterday. So did Jeff from Indiana. They were in the same traffic jam for 3.5 hours. Good Lord. He sat. I wonder if Jeff sat there for 3.5 hours. Jeff from Indiana. Remember that yesterday, Boomer? Jeff was saying, I'm stuck in traffic. Please send somebody to get me.
Absolutely. Well, he sent pictures.
Well, apparently Paul from Athens was too. He says, I sat in traffic Decatur yesterday for 3.5 hours.
Oh.
He says, my battery would have died. I suspect that's probably true.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, lots of stuff here. Let me just tell you, though, they're moving forward. These questions that cannot be answered yet and these concerns that have not been addressed yet, it doesn't matter. AP News reports that as of Friday afternoon, New York now proceeds with a plan for zero-emission vehicles by 2035. A decision by regulators in California has cleared the way for New York to move forward on its goal of requiring all new cars and trucks sold in the state to be zero-emission by 2035, said New York Governor Kathy Hochul. They're going to have a phase-in. 35% of the vehicles have to be zero-emission by 2026, 68% by 2030, 100% by 2035. They're following the California rule. She's very excited about it, Governor Hochul. Here's her quote. We're really putting our foot down on the accelerator. We're revving up our efforts to make sure we have the transition. We had to wait for California. Whatever. All right. Good luck with that. I'm pretty sure it's not going to work. But listen, it's not just EVs, all right? We're talking electric vehicles a lot. That was not the intent. The overall intent here was to paint the big picture of what happens when a sense of activism in politics takes over. When the government says, we not only want it to be this way, we're now going to force you to do certain things. We're going to violate the free market. We're going to subsidize this industry over that industry. In other words, we're going to pick the winners and the losers. Even right down to how's this going to work with the EV stations and the $5 billion worth of grants to put them on the interstate corridors? Well, guess what? Someone not on the interstate corridor gets hosed, because they have to pay $250,000 to install a full charging station if they have the power grid in that area to support level 3 charging. Because if you put in level 1 or level 2 like we have at our houses, people be sitting there for daggum half a day getting charged up. But it's more than that. We got situations right now, like, for instance, the Biden administration's war on fossil fuels is having a direct impact on the Native American community. What are you saying, Phil? What I'm saying is this. A lot of Native American lands deeded to them by the federal government, often referred to as reservation lands, well, they have oil, gas, and coal assets at their disposal, and they're now being told they cannot. They're being told they have a 20-year ban being put in place on oil and gas leasing in some of them, like Navajo lands in northwestern Mexico, New Mexico. Or how about the fact that we've got Alaskan Natives saying they're having their revenue streams cut off by the federal government? Or how about the Crow Nation saying that they have assets worth an estimated $27 billion, and they're being told they can't mine that coal? Or how about North Dakota, which currently the 3 affiliated tribes of North Dakota account for 23% of that state's 1.1 million barrels of oil daily, and they're being told they may be limited in their capacity going forward. That's the federal government basically taking away jobs and revenue streams from entire populations of people here in the United States. Real quick, I got a caller online for. Is that Jeff? Jeff from Indiana. How you doing, brother? You out of that traffic jam?
Yeah, I sat in it for 2.5 hours yesterday, and I finally got up to an intersection where I could get this thing turned around. I turned around and came back the other way.
What was it, Jeff? Was there an accident? This is Highway 31 in Decatur. Was it an accident or construction, or what was it?
Best I could hear that a truck carrying steel or something had turned over or lost its load on the bridge up
there. Oh, wow.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't nobody going nowhere.
Wow. Well, hey, listen, what do you think about all this EV stuff? Are you going to be driving an EV truck one day?
Well, you know, I run a 600-mile run from Indiana to Alabama and back, and I've got just as much power when I get back to Indiana as I did when I left. So I'm wondering how much juice I'm going to have left if I try to run 600 miles on a battery. And, you know, the thing about it is the weight. You know, this motor in here and everything, it probably weighs a couple tons of it. Probably around 2,000, about 1,500, 2,000, or about 3,000 pounds or so. And then, you know, my fuel and everything, this truck has a capacity for 100 gallons of fuel, so let's figure that eight pounds a gallon or so. And so what's this battery and everything? I can only carry, you know, legally 80,000 pounds.
Wow.
You know, for total truck weight. So what's the truck going to weigh with a battery big enough to give me enough juice to take 80,000-pound load down the road 600 miles?
You know what's going to happen. You're going to have tandem trailers. One of them's going to be full of batteries. The other one's full of goods.
Yeah, but then, see, I won't be able to haul as much. And then, guess what? Your goods are going to go up because I'm going to be limited on my capacity.
I don't know what's going to happen here, Jeff. In fact, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but in California, they're already mandating that to offload at the ports of San Diego and places like that, that they're going to require it to be electric trucks, which means that you're going to get to the border of California, either have to switch trucks or switch loads to another carrier who's going to go in with the electric truck just in the California section.
Yeah, and that's going to be real efficient, I'm sure.
Yeah, I feel certain.
Now, are they making all vehicles in Florida have to, or is it just a small vehicle?
No, it's California. California, I believe they are headed to the trucking industry too, man. Hey, listen, brother, I hate it, but I'm up against the break. I am so sorry you had to sit in that traffic yesterday, but I'm glad you're good. Have a good one today, all right? All right.
Have a good one, Phil.
All right, Boomer, take us to the break. Last break of the day. This show got away from me, man. This show, like, it turned into a Dipper 2 got viral, would you say, Boomer?
Absolutely.
Viral.
Viral.
All Dipper. Right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, viral. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, before we go any further, I got to tell you, one of our sponsors for the longest time now has been Just Love Coffee Cafe. Love that place. Both the locations in our listening area, one on Hughes Road in Madison out towards City Hall and the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. I've been to both. Love them. Love the menu. One of my favorite things to do is get the womlet. It's like this big, huge, fat womlet with all kinds of stuff in it. Even have tater tots in it, and they cook it in a waffle iron. I mean, it's just amazing. But their environment is also good. Let me just say, if you're looking for a place to take a break, meet with friends, have a small group meeting, or just, you know, hang out, Just Love Coffee Cafe prides themselves on setting up an environment where you feel like you want to stay there. They got the Wi-Fi, they got all of it, and they literally... Not just the food, not just the coffee, not just the great staff. They literally have an environment that makes people want to come there. And that's one of the things I like about it. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. Check them out. I got some great texts. By the way, I just got a text from Chris from Athens, texted me pictures of the accident yesterday that we were talking about with Jeff from Indiana and another one of our listeners that were stuck for like hours. And I can see it, man. It was an 18-wheeler on a bend in the road. Looks like it's load shifted. It went over. It ruptured the whole back trailer. I'm guessing that's rolled steel that was inside that probably rolled loose and shifted the load. Anyway, they had to get a crane out there and haul it off the interstate. That's not a tow truck. A crane is what it took to get that thing lifted up and off the road. So, yeah, hey, Chris from Athens, thanks very much for sending those pictures, and appreciate you filling us in. I got a caller on line three. Let me do that real quick. Chase from Albertville. We got about 3 minutes. How you doing, Chase?
Hey, Phil, doing good. Thanks.
Good, man.
I sent a text earlier. You know, I'm a Republican conservative. I've got a Tesla, and it works great for us. However, I don't the subsidization with the taxes and – I don't agree with the government trying to push them on us, but it works great for us. We were spending about $1,500 a month in gas just driving. Take my daughter to Talladega for the deaf school and go to Huntsville some. You know, with all that, doing the math, it's going to save us money in the long run.
Yeah, I could see that. That's the kind of environment that I could see it working in, Chase. Let me ask you this. If you were to take a family road trip to Disney World down in Orlando, though, would you feel comfortable taking the Tesla the whole way?
No, we have a Honda Odyssey for that.
There you go. Well,
we're keeping the minivan.
Yeah. That's...
Like I say, it's not. I don't think it should be pushed, but it's working great for us. And I know y'all had some questions about charging. I charge at home. I installed a level 2 at home.
Yeah.
So it takes me about 4 hours to fully charge. If I go to a level 3 fast charger, it takes about 20 minutes.
Wow.
If you're on about 10-20%, it'll take you about 20 minutes to charge.
So how long have you had your vehicle?
About 3 months.
About 3 months. Okay.
Yeah.
Did the charging station come with it, or did you have to buy it separate?
It was $400.
$400.
And I'm an electrical engineer, so I installed it myself. If you had a professional install it, probably be less than $2,000 to get it fully, you know, installed by somebody.
Is there any? I mean, we had one caller that pointed out that over time batteries adapt, they change. And is there any thought that one day your batteries could wind up, you know, not holding their charge well, and then you have to change out?
Yes. The Tesla's, the reason I went with the Tesla, I thought about getting the Chevy Bolt, you know, just as a third vehicle.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're so new. The Teslas are kind of been there, done that. There's one on YouTube that's been a million miles. But the Teslas have kind of single sales that could be changed out. And they got a 120,000-mile warranty. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to sell it before that warranty.
Yeah, give it to somebody else before it goes. Chase, man, our music's playing. The show's over. I got to go, brother. We're up against a hard break. You have a great day. Thanks for calling in. That's a little bit enlightening on it. All right, folks. What a great audience. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Boomer and I back here tomorrow, too. Have an amazing night.